This is the Homestead Journey Podcast, the podcast dedicated to the pursuit of self-sufficiency, self-reliance, and sustainability. This is episode number 26 of the Homestead Journey Podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today for this episode. I was sitting here thinking about the fact that there are 52 weeks in a year, give or take a little bit, right? And so if you divide that in half, episode number 26 marks the halfway point through our first year together. And so I just want to say thank you to everyone, whether you have been with us from the very beginning or you are new to the podcast. Just thank you so much for your support. Those of you who have reached out with kind words, I really, really appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to many, many more weeks, months, and hopefully years together as we journey towards self-sufficiency, self-reliance, and sustainability. It is Easter weekend. I am actually doing this podcast Easter Sunday evening. And folks, this has been the most bizarre Holy Week of my life. And certainly I did miss the gathering together as we celebrate Palm Sunday. And then our church always has a Maundy-Thursday service that I just really, really enjoy. And then we usually have a sunrise service on Easter Sunday morning, followed by a wonderful breakfast at our church. And then obviously celebrating Easter together as Christians is always an exciting time. And then, you know, usually we have my in-laws and my brother-in-law, sister-in-law in town. And it's usually a great week and weekend of celebration and reflection and all of those kinds of things. And obviously this year it was quite a bit different. But we got through it, and you know, it has been an opportunity to reflect on you know, other things, on things that maybe sometimes we take for granted. And so anyhow, overall, it has been a good week here on the homestead. And instead of focusing on what isn't, let's focus on what is and jump on over to this week's Homestead Happenings. It has been an absolutely wonderful and very, very busy week here on our homestead. It's just that time of year when, you know, spring is springing on us, and so many things are starting to come to life. The chicks and the turkeys are in the brooder, and they are doing very, very well. And speaking of the chicks and the turkeys, I had a listener reach out to me this week and suggest that I provide a little bit more information with regards to shipping chicks through the mail. There are some people who think that shipping chicks through the mail is cruel and unusual punishment. And that's because they don't understand that when chicks hatch, just before they hatch, they actually absorb the yolk that's in the egg. Many people think that when a chick develops, it develops in the yolk, but that's not correct. They actually develop in the white of the egg. And just before they hatch, they absorb that yolk. And so what that does is it provides them with the nutrients that they need for the first few days of life. So when they're being shipped through the mail without food and water, that's okay, because nature has created them in such a way that they really don't need food and water. They're okay. So hopefully that clears things up. If you're somebody who thinks that shipping chicks through the mail is bad because they don't have food and water, rest assured, they're okay. They have feasted just before they hatched. This week we had a couple of our geese start setting, so that's very exciting. We'll see how many. It's a mixture of geese and duck eggs that are in there, because we have our geese and ducks together, and I have no idea how many eggs are under each one of them. The one had been kind of indicating that she wanted to set for a while, but it was kind of on and off. And then this week she just really started sitting hard. And then the other one joined her as well. So we'll see what we get out of that. That's always very, very exciting. We also have a lot of eggs right now in our incubator. So I have a small incubator, I think, that has 7 eggs in it. Those are all chicken eggs. And so those are due to hatch, I think, in about a week. And then in our larger incubator, I have a mixture of geese and duck and chicken eggs. Now, I know you're not supposed to do that, but what I did is I started the goose eggs, and then I added a few duck eggs, and then I added the chicken eggs, so that they theoretically all should be hatching at around the same time. So we'll see if that works. Nothing ventured, nothing gained, but when I candle them, it does seem like things are developing nicely. So we shall see. It's my first time ever doing this. And so I'm excited to see how things come out with all of this. This week, we also played a little bit of Pig Tetris. It's time for one of the sows to farrow, and so I moved the one that had farrowed back in January to a paddock with a smaller hut, and then I moved the one that's due to farrow over to the larger hoop coop, so she'll have a little bit more room. And then I also set up the summer housing for our gilts and feeders, and what I have are just some cattle panels that are hooped over between several T-posts. And then what I do is I just cover that with a cheap tarp and throw some hay underneath there. And that is the summer housing for them. Obviously, in the wintertime, the snow load, it's just not built to handle snow load. And so I just take the tarp off and replace it with a new tarp in the spring. And so I set up that summer housing. And so they're down there now. And then I also have one of my gilts. I just absolutely love this pig. We named her Betswine Ross. There's a whole story behind that, but I won't get into it. But she was one that I really, really, she's one of my favorite pigs ever, to be honest with you. She has such an awesome personality. She loves belly rubs. She's just a great, great pig. And I had somebody reach out to me interested in a breeding sow. And, so we made arrangements and, she would like to have her bred. Now she's going to be bred to her father, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. To do some line breeding, can be a good thing, especially if you're trying to, bring out certain characteristics within your line. And, she is just such a sweet, sweet pig that I think she's going to really be a great mom. And so I moved her in with Bear this week, but I forgot to turn on the hot fence between the two paddocks. And she went over with Bear for a little bit, had some food, and she scooted right back under the fence over with the girls. So I got another section of pig fence, of hog panel, and I reinforced that section and made sure this time that the hot wire is on. And we moved her back over with Bear today. And so hopefully they will do the little dance, and we will be moving her on to a new home here in a couple of months. The last thing with regards to our animals that I wanted to share with you, I had shared with you a couple of weeks ago that we got hit by some hawks. And so we had our hens in their winter hoop coop, which is very, very small, which I really wanted to get them out into their main run. And so I am trying something. Fingers crossed this will work. I went and bought one of those plastic owls. And those are supposed to, theoretically, because I guess hawks and owls are kind of like the sharks and the jets. And so as long as you move it around periodically, that's supposed to deter hawks. Now, I've heard kind of mixed feedback with regards to that, but we are giving that a try. And so I've got a plastic owl that we are putting on the fence and kind of moving around periodically. So we will see, and I will report back to you how well that works. By way of growing food, we are really just, I mean, we are busy, 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 and just so much stuff going on here. The stuff in the seed starting trays is just really looking great. Things are just have just come up well and growing up well. Overall, I'm very, very happy with every one of my options. The Haas, the small seed starting kits seem to be doing well. The larger one, things are doing well in it. Again, my complaint with the larger one is really it is too big. And I think I'm going to have to do a lot of potting up on those as compared to the soil blocks. We'll see, but I think I'm going to have to do that because the squares are just so small. The things in the 1020 trays from Bootstrap Farmer are just going gangbusters in the soil blocks. And right now, honestly, I think out of all three options, the soil blocks are still my favorite. I think that's probably the route I will go. I'm glad that I tried the Haas stuff out. I will continue to use it year in, year out because it is so well made. But I don't know as I will buy any more of those because, again, the larger one is just too big. And I think that size-wise, I get more bang for my buck with the 1020 trays than the smaller seed starting kits. They're great kits, don't get me wrong, extremely well made, but I just think the 1020 trays with the soil blocks just seem to work a little bit better for me. Now, what I did do this week is go buy some of the El Cheapo 1020 trays, and that's because I only bought the pack of five when I bought the ones earlier, just because I wanted to see how those were made. Now here it is, I'm running out of room in those five, and I need to get some more things started. And because Amazon is just so slow to ship things, I just went down to my local feed store and bought some of the El Cheapos. Well, the El Cheapos really aren't all that cheapo. For seven of them, it cost me $13. And I was thinking, that's about half of what I paid for the five that I got from Bootstrap Farmer. And the ones from Bootstrap Farmer are just, I mean, it's not even close as far as how much better made the ones are from Bootstrap Farmer. So I will definitely be buying more of those in the future from them because they are just extremely rugged and I think they're going to hold up extremely well. Outside, we are, again, just very, very busy with the gardening that we've got going on. I've been working with my son to get the fence up around our Ruth Stout bed. And so if you follow us on Instagram or on Facebook, you've seen the pictures of my son and I working together. And it was just so much fun. Working with him on that project has just been a blast. And he's enjoyed it. He's expressed to me how much he's enjoyed working with me on making that a reality. And so that just time spent with him like that is extremely precious. And one of those, you know, I'll be the first one to admit, this is not the best looking fence ever. There are places where it is extremely wonky and it looks like somebody was drunk when they put it up. But let me tell you something, every time I look at that fence, I am going to smile. And not because it makes me laugh because it's so poorly done. Really, it's not that bad. But it's going to make me smile because every time I look at it, I'm going to remember that it was my son and I that built that. And that means everything to me. So we got the fence up around the roost out bed. And so now on to planting, getting seeds in the ground. Before I get to that, though, let me share with you about a piece of software that I have been using. I've hinted at this in past episodes, but before I told you about it, I just really wanted to get a feel for it and say, okay, is this something that I like? Is it something that or something that I'll never use again? Folks, I am absolutely in love with this piece of software. It is from growveg.com, and it's actually not even a piece of software. It's a website. It's an interactive site where you can actually do a layout of your garden. And it actually will allow you to do it in square foot garden layouts or in more of the, and I use huge air quotes here, traditional gardening approach where you can drag out rows and, you know, it will do things based on traditional spacing or the square foot garden spacing. And so obviously my raised beds, I have laid out in the square foot gardening method, and it's just awesome. And then we'll talk a little bit more here in a bit about how I've been laying out the Ruth Stout bed, but this has really been the first time where I have put this much thought into how I am planting my vegetables. Now, with the exception of making sure that I planted my tomatoes and my cucumbers and all of those kinds of things that I was growing up trellises on the north side of my raised beds, everything else was just a crapshoot. I never really put a whole lot of thought into how I laid things out, how much I planted. It was just on the fly, winging it, getting seeds in the ground, bada bing, bada boom. And it's worked well. We have had great gardens and achieved great harvests. But this year, my goal is to really maximize the harvest. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in this week's Charting the Course. But this software really has helped me, and it's kind of forced me, but in a good way, to really be intentional about how I have laid out my garden plan. And so I'm really, really excited and stoked about how this is going. And so check it out, growveg.com. I make no money off of this. I'm not sponsored by them by any stretch of the imagination. It's just something I use, something I enjoy. And so I'm recommending it to you. Check it out. See what you think. I've really, really found it very helpful. And so this week, I started planting in the square foot gardens. We got in some lettuce, carrot, spinach, kale, kohlrabi, peas. And then today, we started planting in our Ruth Stout bed. Today, we started, we put in potatoes. And at the end of the day, I put in 120 hills of potatoes. Now we'll see if they all come up. But we have Superior, which is a white potato, Yukon Gold, which is a gold potato, Russets, which is the baking potatoes, Adirondack Red and Blue potato. So a red and a blue potato. And then one from Row 7 Seeds called Upstate Abundance, which I am really excited to try out. It's a smaller potato. I'm trying to remember what they call those. It's not a fingerling, but it's the small ones that you would more put in like, with a roast or something like that. But anyhow, extremely excited to try that out. Did not anticipate putting in that many, to be honest with you. My plan, called for, 48, and 24, whatever that is, 72. I think maybe, whatever. And then I had all of these other seed potatoes and I just went crazy and laid them all out. And so it ended up being 120 hills. We will see what we get out of that. And then we also planted some English peas in that garden, or shucking peas. So my son, I didn't know this till late last year. My son absolutely loves peas. I never knew that. And so I said, hey, if you like peas, we'll plant peas. And so that's what we're doing, we did today. And in fact, he was telling me today, he is looking forward to when we have these peas to shuck. He is going to sit on the front porch. He's going to shuck peas while he listens to big band music and watches his chickens. That sounds like a great life to me. All right, folks, that's a little bit of what's been going here on the homestead. I hope things are going well where you are at. And that you are healthy, that you are well. And man, I tell you, it was just a great week on the homestead. All right, let's jump on over to this week's Charting the Course. This week on Charting the Course, what I want to talk about are five things that we are doing here on our homestead this year to maximize our harvest. Now, to be honest with you, this is a bit of an experiment. I love to experiment with things. I rarely garden 2 years in a row the same way. Now, maybe that's kind of dumb of me. I don't know. But I'm always trying something new and trying to figure out how can we do things better. And because of everything that's going on this year, I really do feel a very strong sense of urgency to grow as much food as possible. But whether or not we are facing a crisis, so to speak, like we currently are, or whether it's just simply a matter of trying to maximize our investment from the standpoint of the time, the effort, the energy, and the money that we put into gardening, I think these five things are things that every gardener should at least think about doing in order to potentially maximize their harvest. Now, these are in no particular order. It's not that number one is more important than number five or anything like that. It just happens to be how they came into my little pea brain, okay? But let's jump right into it. Number one, succession planting. Now, succession planting is the idea that once one vegetable is done producing, you remove it from the area and you plant something else in its place, right? Very simple thought, but a very profound thought, right? If we do this correctly, we can achieve, you know, two or three, four harvests from the same piece of ground. But in order to do that, you have to be very intentional and thoughtful about what you plant where. And that's something that I've never really done a good job of. Again, like I said before, my past method of laying out my garden was I put the tall stuff on the north side of my beds, and then I just went to town and I put seeds in the ground. And to a certain extent, it worked well for me, but I certainly did not maximize the use of the space by using succession planting methodology. Well, that's where this growveg.com, and you're going to hear a lot about that today. And there may be other software options out there that you find helpful. And if there are, let me know. Send me an email, thehomesteadjourneypodcast@gmail.com, or let me know via our social media, Instagram, Facebook, etc. I would love to know what other options are out there, but I just know that growveg.com has worked well for me. And what it's done is it's really forced me to be thoughtful about how I am laying out my garden. And so now I'm looking at it and I'm visualizing, okay, I've got spinach in here. Boom, when that spinach is done, bang, what can I put in there? And the great thing about the software is that it allows you to think about that. And you can actually say, okay, this spinach is going to be in the ground from April to June. And then once it's passed, okay, what else am I going to put there? Do I want to put Brussels sprouts there? What can I follow on after with so that I can achieve another harvest? Now, I'm probably not going to want to put spinach right back in there because spinach in the summertime has a tendency to bolt. So I might want to wait and plant some more spinach in another spot later on in the year. So maybe in August, when, I don't know, I just throw beets out there. But let's say my beets are passed, I might want to put some spinach where my beets were at, right? So the idea of succession planting uses the same piece of ground multiple times to maximize your harvest. The second thing that I am doing this year, and this is something that I have been doing for a very long time, but it's intensive planting. And intensive planting is the idea where you, instead of planting things in a single row, maybe you plant a double row of beets or a triple row of lettuce. The intensive planting methodology that I use in my raised beds is the square foot gardening method. Now, the idea behind the square foot gardening method is that you plant everything on the basis of a square foot. And generally speaking, you have beds that are 4 foot wide by however long you want them to be. But the reason why you have them 4 foot wide is because for most people, leaning over and reaching 2 feet out is about the extent of what people can do comfortably. And so from either side of the bed, you can comfortably reach, that two feet in. So a 4 foot wide bed from either side, you're able to basically get every square. Now, my dad, he prefers a 3 foot wide bed. He finds that 2 feet is too long for him, too far for him. So experiment and find out what works best for you. But I have found that a 4 foot bed works well for me. But what I'm also doing is I'm going to take that same idea and I'm going to use it in my Ruth Stout garden. So instead of planting everything by row, I've mapped out and I've put pictures again up on our Instagram and our Facebook pages of how I have laid out that bed so that instead of planting in rows that are 18 inches wide or whatever, I'm actually planting in beds that I have laid out that are 4 foot wide by about 12 foot long. So that's going to allow me to really maximize the amount of stuff that I can get in that area. The other idea, though, behind the intensive planning methodology is that by putting things closer together, it helps crowd out the weeds. So using the Ruth Stout method of the hay as mulch, but then planting things closely together, hopefully it should really, really crowd out any kind of weed problem that I might have. Now, it has worked very well in my raised beds. There have been some times when weeds have kind of gotten ahead of me, but that's been my fault. It wasn't a problem with the methodology. But that intensive planting really allows you to get more vegetables in a smaller area and really maximize the productivity. Now, there are a number of different intensive planting methodologies that are out there. I would recommend that you kind of look into them. But the one that I use and I have really, really found very helpful has been the square foot gardening methodology. The third thing that we are going to be doing this year to maximize our harvest is companion planting. Now, this is something that I have wanted to try for, again, a very long time, but it's something that I just have never done because I wasn't as intentional with regards to how I laid out my square foot gardens. I was just out there. It was like bada bing, bada boom, put some seeds in the ground, and that was it. Now, I have heard people say that companion planting is nothing more than the voodoo science of gardening. I don't know. Maybe they're right. But I've also heard other people say that it is an extremely valuable methodology of enhancing plant health, and if you enhance plant health, you are going to maximize the yield that those plants will provide. Now, the idea behind companion planting is that there are certain plants that do well or do better next to each other. I'm looking here at Clyde's garden planter, and he has companion plants. And so, for example, next to onions, you might want to consider planting beets, carrots, lettuce, spinach, or tomatoes. Next to cabbage, you might want to consider bush beans, spinach, onions, beets, or potatoes. Next to peppers, you might want to consider bush beans, carrots, onions, or okra. Now, what is the idea here? The idea is that in some cases, what will happen is when you have one variety next to another, it will deter pests that might otherwise attack variety A. The other thought process is that when you plant one thing that maybe is very nitrogen dependent next to something that's a nitrogen fixer, what you're doing is you are feeding the soil that's being depleted by the nitrogen taker, so to speak. And so that's the idea behind companion planting. And so I'm going to try it this year. And again, because I'm using thegroveedge.com, and again, I'm not a paid spokesman, all right? So if it feels that way, I'm sorry. But using that software has really helped me think about, okay, I'm planting onions here. What might I want to consider planting next to them? I'm planting tomatoes here. What might I want to consider planting next to them? Now, I've been using Clyde's Garden Planner for a number of years, but I don't generally take it out with me to the garden what I was planting. So I never really put much thought into what should I plant next to this plant. You know, I'm planting whatever beans. What should I plant next to the beans? What would be a good companion plant? Now, that's something, again, that I've wanted to do for a long time, but because I wasn't as intentional about how I was laying out my garden, I hadn't gotten around to it. But we are going to be doing that this year. The fourth thing that we're going to be doing this year is something that I've been doing for a number of years. This is absolutely nothing new, and that is vertical gardening. And that is just simply using trellises. And what I have found that make great trellises, very easy to put up, very economical, and that is simply cattle panels and T-posts. They are amazing. Now, I had built some of the trellises that are recommended by Mel Bartholomew in the Square Foot Gardening book. Don't do it, folks. Do not do it. They're a great idea in theory, but they don't work well. And they're relatively expensive to put together. Whereas these T-post and cattle panel trellises, so easy to put up, take down, move around. It's just, I love them. Now, one of the things that I did last year, and I just bought some more cattle panels to add on to it, and that is actually creating big hoops with cattle panels so that you are creating kind of a tunnel that things can grow up on, and then it makes it easier to pick because these things are now hanging down. And so I grew pole beans up those last year. I'm going to be growing some cucumbers up those. My hope had been to grow some like melons and squash and things like that up those trellises, and then really support those with either pantyhose or whatnot, t-shirts. But it just not going to work out this year. So this year I'm going to be using those for my bush beans, and I think cucumbers is how I have those laid out this year. But vertical gardening, using trellises for, again, your tomatoes, for peas, for cucumbers, I mean, anything that's vining like that, it really, really saves you a lot of space. And again, it allows you to maximize your harvest from the area that you have. The fifth and final thing that we're going to be using this year, again, to maximize our harvest, is some keyhole gardening techniques. Now, keyhole gardening is a methodology that, from my understanding, generally speaking, refers to a raised bed that is more round in shape. And then envision it kind of like a donut. You've got a hole in the middle. You cut a section out of your donut, and then you can kind of go into that hole in the middle, and now you have access to this round garden. Now, some people will put in the middle a compost bin. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is more with the idea of the layout. And the thought behind that is that now you are, again, maximizing the use of your land, of the ground that you have, because you're not wasting a lot of it to walkways or to paths. Now, a way that people in the square foot gardening realm have kind of implemented that a little bit is, instead of doing two rectangular beds side by side, so let's say a 4x8 with a 2 foot path in the middle and then a 4x8 bed next to it, what they'll do is more of a U-shape bed, so that now what you have is, again, you've got maybe it's a 4x8, and then, but imagine that 4x8 connected into, again, that U, so that you can kind of walk into it, and keeping in mind the idea of the 2 feet of depth, that's, you know, kind of the comfortable reach for most people, now you have access to that. And instead of wasting that space as a walkway, you are now utilizing that for vegetable production. So how am I using those techniques, or that technique, to maximize my yield? Well, I'm using that in the Ruth Stout bed. So in the Ruth Stout bed, how I have designed this is it's a bed that's about 28 feet wide by 40 feet in length. And so what I did is I created a gate on either end, kind of longwise, and that gate is 4 feet wide. So imagine a 4 foot path down the middle of this bed that splits up the roost out bed into two roughly 12 foot sections on either side of that path. Now what I've done is I've taken those 12 foot sections on either side, and I have turned them into, again, those 4x12 in essence beds coming down my entire garden space. Instead of taking my path all the way to the fence, instead what I've done is I have stopped my path 2 feet from the fence on either side. By doing that, what I have done is I have created 48 square feet of more plantable space. So in essence, what I have done by simply not taking my path all the way to the fence, I have created enough space that would be the equivalent of a 4x12 raised bed. Now, that's not a lot, but it is a lot, right? On a 4x12 raised bed, that is 48 square feet that I can plant. Now, you might be sitting there thinking, well, 48 square feet, that's not that big of a deal. But if I plant it using square foot garden planting methodologies, I could plant in 48 square feet 432 beans, 432 beets, 48 broccoli, 48 Brussels sprouts, 48 cabbage, 768 carrots, 48 collards, 96 cucumbers, 48 eggplants, 48 kale, 192 kohlrabi, 288 leaf lettuce, 432 onions, 432 peas, 48 peppers, 768 radishes, 192 rutabagas, 432 spinach, 192 Swiss chard, 48 tomatoes, 432 turnips, or 48 zucchini. That's a crap load of food. Now, I can't get all of that in there. I'm just saying that I could get 432 beans and 48 square feet. Now, I'm not sure you would want to plant 432 beans. I hope you like beans. But my point is 48 square feet of room to plant because I'm simply utilizing a keyhole garden technique whereby, again, I am just recovering 2 feet at the end of each walkway whereby I can plant additional vegetables. So what are the 5 things that we are doing to maximize our harvest this year? Number one, succession planning, trying to achieve multiple harvests from the same piece of ground. Number two, intensive planting plants closer together using square foot garden methodologies, again, in order to maximize the harvest from that piece of ground. Number three, companion planting things that should do well together and complement each other. Healthier plants should mean healthier, more abundant yields. Number four, vertical gardening, save some space, grow up. Number five, keyhole gardening techniques, whereby instead of having our paths go all the way to the fence, we are reclaiming 2 feet away from the fence, so 4 square feet total at the end of each path that we can plant and again maximize our yield from that piece of ground. Hopefully, folks, these are some things that you will find helpful, some techniques that you may be able to implement in your gardening this year. I hope that you have a fabulous garden, that you are able to achieve an abundant harvest, and that these techniques will help you do that. All right, folks, we have come to the end of another episode. Thank you again for spending some time with us. I do appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to join us on the homestead journey. If you haven't already, if you could pop over to your favorite podcast player, leave us a thumbs up or review. I would really appreciate it. Share this podcast with friends, people that you think might find it helpful. And if you have any questions or comments, reach out to me. I would be glad to hear from you. TheHomesteadJourneyPodcast@gmail.com. Or again, you can reach us via our social media accounts. As always, the music on this episode is provided by Audionautix.com. So a big thank you to them. And until next time, everybody, keep up the good work.